You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And as we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens, I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we return here on a midweek edition show here on Wednesday as we dive into everything relating to this Baltimore Ravens team. And since it is Wednesday, we will be talking about these mailbag questions that we got here, and we have five of them. We'll be diving into three in the second segment, two in the final segment, none in the first today. What we're going to be doing in the first segment is just talking a little bit about the Ravens and the recent moves that they've made. Also go into detail about some of the things that the coaches and players had to say after the week 12 win against the Cleveland Browns on Sunday Night Football. So we have a ton to talk about today. So let's jump right into it. Before we do that, though, be sure to follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you get your audio form shows, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern Time, when we put out our content. Also, be sure to follow us on YouTube. That means subscribing to the channel, hitting that like button, the notification bell. It all really helps out a lot. And I do want to thank everybody for making Locked On Ravens your first listen of the day, and everybody who has already followed the show, subscribed to the YouTube channel, and just overall listens. I really do appreciate it. Our 600th episode was actually on Friday with Kadri Ismail. So we're chugging along here on Locked On Ravens. It's been a great journey. I'm looking forward to continuing to cover this team that is 8-3 at the top of the AFC through 12 weeks. Also, be sure to follow me on Twitter at ChaosTracker34 and the Locked On Ravens account at Locked On Ravens for episode updates. So let's dive into this talk here. We're going to just do, you know, just general Ravens news notes and quotes. Nothing too fancy here, but still very important because the Ravens are making moves all the time. And they made a couple of them on Monday, so we'll talk about those. And Chris Streveler, the quarterback formerly of the Arizona Cardinals, also played in the CFL. He was a CFL guy, came over to the Ravens. He signed with Baltimore's practice squad, the Ravens releasing Kenji Bahar in the process there. And it seems like poor Kenji Bahar has been in and out and in and out and in and out for the past like couple months here, where he's a local guy, went to Calvert Hall and ended up going to Monmouth. And he's been with the team for a while, but it's been in spurts, you know, it's been a week here or a month there. And so he's now off the Ravens practice squad after signing last week. Obviously, this whole thing kind of sparked by Trace McSorley getting signed from the Ravens practice squad to the Cardinals active roster. And pretty much the Ravens and Cardinals, they swap out third string quarterbacks. That's really what it was. The Cardinals keep three quarterbacks on their roster. So McSorley is on their active roster. And for the Ravens, they only have two on their roster. So Streveler is the third guy just down in the practice squad. And I mean, you know, who would you rather have, Streveler, McSorley? You know, personally, I give the edge to McSorley a little bit, but that's mainly just because of the fact that he's been in Baltimore. I mean, he was, I guess, in Baltimore. He knew the playbook, knew his teammates, and that's not saying Streveler can't pick it up and can't perform in the offense. But, you know, you would prefer a guy, at least I think, who had just had the experience and had been in, you know, game situations with the Ravens. Now, Streveler did play some for the Cardinals and in live game action, but, you know, the Cardinals thought McSorley was the better option. They go with him. The Ravens, in turn, they pick up the guy that the Cardinals released for McSorley. So kind of funny how that works out. And the Ravens also placing cornerback Kevon Seymour on the reserve COVID list. So, you know, there's not exactly any information about, oh, was this a positive test? Was it a close contact situation? Is he vaccinated? Is he not vaccinated? But what we do know is it is on that list. Hopefully there are no others who get placed on the list in the coming days. And, you know, that'll be that. And that'll be all. So I am hopeful that, you know, Seymour can have a fast recovery. He's able to get back on the field as soon as possible, you know, for his health, obviously, number one, but also because the Ravens secondary is just, it's stretched so, so, so thin right now. And they need every available body they can get. Obviously, Jimmy Smith has been out the past couple of weeks. Hopefully he's able to come back. And Anthony Averett's been banged up. Tavon Young's been banged up. You have Chris Westry who's banged up. So it's just, you know, they need everybody they can get, especially with the news that Ardarius Washington broke his foot last week, apparently in practice, and he's now done for the year on injured reserve. And the Ravens also protecting four guys from their practice squad for week 13 against Pittsburgh in Chris Streveler, so he gets the protection. Kevin Tolliver, a defensive back. David Sharp, an offensive tackle. And Khalil McKenzie, who has also been playing kind of musical chairs on the roster. He was signed to the active roster, then taken off of it, and then, you know, practice squad. So he's a guard and defensive tackle. Baltimore's been kind of cross-training him at defensive, or at guard. He started the year as a defensive tackle. So they are going with depth. The Ravens are saying, no one else is taking our third string quarterback. You know, they're protecting him. They're saying, we want our guy protected. And it seems like Lamar Jackson completely over that illness. He was able to practice fully all last week. And, you know, obviously the four interceptions kind of say, oh, is he still sick? But no, he's okay, it seems like. Tyler Huntley has been a good option for them as the backup. I think they made the right call with that. And so Strebler's going to be at least on their roster for one more week with the protection. And then obviously the offensive tackle depth with David Sharp, I think that's important because of the offensive line, just how that's been this year. You got McKenzie, who can also kind of play both roles of offense and defense. The Ravens love their versatile teams, those versatile positionless players, and McKenzie can do it on both sides of the football. And then you also have Tolliver, who we just talked about. You know, we talked about Kevon Seymour and Kevin Tolliver with the Ravens secondary being how it is. You know, if they need to call up somebody, it will probably be Tolliver in this situation. So all different things happening. It's all the roster moves really going on and the protections going on early in the week. And Baltimore's had to shuffle so many times this season with how many injuries they've gone through. But they are the most injured team in the NFL, in my opinion. You know, you can look at the actual stats and say, oh, Tennessee has one more guy or two more guys or whatever. But in terms of how many guys are out and on injured reserve and out for multiple weeks and months and the pure talent that they've lost, in my opinion, Baltimore, far and away, has been the most snake-bitten team in the league. So they've been through all that, and they're still 8-3, top of the AFC through 12 weeks. How impressive it has been. And, you know, some other injury notes, Patrick Queen, we saw him leave briefly with a rib injury. He was down in a lot of pain during week 12. He did come back in the game, and John Harbaugh did say he didn't think it was anything that should linger. And he did say he didn't want to make any definitive comments because just with how the year has gone for them, they, you know, for example, they put Derek Wolfe's practice window up and said, hey, you know, Derek Wolfe, you have 21 days to come back. You know, he's looking whatever, you know, but then it started to deteriorate and it's all right. Is Derek Wolfe coming back? Is he coming back? And all of a sudden he can't play for the rest of the season. So it feels like Queen will be okay. Obviously, I don't want to say anything definitive either because of how the year has gone, but it seems like Queen will be okay. And Queen even talked about it himself after the game. He was asked if there was any chance he would sit out, but he said no, you know, no chance. He felt like his teammates needed him. And there was that clip of him going up to Lamar Jackson and being like, you know, you're good. So he's turning into a leader. And we all know the player Patrick Queen can be, and especially with the struggles he went through early in the season, he knows the player he can be. He knew he was struggling. You know, it's not, you know, one Twitter user saying, Patrick Queen, you need to play better. And he's like, oh, wow, I never thought of that before. No, he understands and he knows. He's put in the work. He's gotten better. He's been put in kind of a new role with Josh Bynes out there as well. And he's played really well. So credit to Patrick Queen. And, you know, Lamar Jackson talking about his four interceptions after the game, he said he was hot about it. He put the blame on himself. This is a guy that, you know, was never going to blame his teammates for anything. Say, oh, you know, if Marky Andrews went over here, or if this happened this way, or if, you know, Marquise Brown does this. No, he puts it on himself. He understands that, you know, he has to play better in those situations. For the four interceptions marked Lamar Jackson's longest streak of interceptions. He had three interceptions in three straight possessions. You know, four interceptions were the highest amount he's had in an NFL game, and he's thrown a lot more this season than he is been accustomed to. We talked about it as rookie season with the fumbles, where he fumbled an astronomical amount of times in about half the year. And some quarterbacks have less fumbles than he had in his rookie season in, like, you know, four more games, eight more games than Jackson played. So you didn't really see turnovers in 2019. Didn't see a ton of them in 2020. Kind of shorted up a little bit, but this offense is a much pass heavier unit than they were in those years. And Jackson's being asked to do more with the football throwing it this year. And rightfully so. He's a good passer, a great thrower of the football, and his skills throwing the football should be on full display for everybody. So obviously the more you throw the ball, the more interceptions you're going to throw. But Jackson does have more interceptions on less attempts this season than he did last year. So it's one thing to keep an eye on. I don't think it's an overly big concern, but it is a concern, you know, for me. It's a small one. And if it continues, right, like Pittsburgh has given Baltimore, at least Lamar Jackson, very big trouble over the course of his career. If it continues in Pittsburgh, maybe, you know, that meter starts to creep up for me. You know, I just think I'm chalking it up to, hey, he was a little bit rusty, made some poor reads. You know, definitely some of those were his fault, but then he had one bounce off of Rashad Bateman's hands into a defender's arms. He had the one where John Johnson made a great play on the football. Mark Andrews kind of tips it up and it falls into his lap. So not saying it's not Jackson's fault. He deserves criticism for him. He understands he has to play better. And it's refreshing to hear a quarterback say, you know, I got to get better, got to get back in the lab, got to continue to improve. You know, we missed opportunities because of those interceptions, because they did multiple times for the half. They absolutely did miss those opportunities. So I'm hopeful and I'm excited to see Jackson's growth throughout that because he's still young. He's still growing. He's still 24 years old. So, you know, you can set up, oh, you're making excuses. You're new. No, Jackson deserves criticism. He made some bad throws. He made some bad reads. Those have to be improved upon. But I'm not saying, hey, hit the panic button because Lamar Jackson all of a sudden is going to throw four interceptions every game. That's just not how it's going to work, in my opinion. I think he's a much better player than that. He's definitely shown that over the course of his career. We'll head into our first break now, though. When we get back, we'll be diving into our first batch of mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. BetOnline, as we've covered all season, with more props, odds, and lines than ever before as football season continues to march to the playoffs. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. We return here. It's our second segment of this Wednesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with you. And let's dive into these mailbag questions. We have five of them today. They're very good questions and some that cover a lot of different bases. So I'm excited to cover a few bases here today, not just talk about one specific topic. Our first question, though, it comes from It's Lamar's Season. And he asks, how great has the defense been the last few weeks? They have been balling out. And they absolutely 100% have been. This has been a unit where, you know, you go back to the old school Ravens, you think of the defense. You know, the Lamar Jackson era has really been, it's about the offense. It's about, you know, scoring 40, 30 points a game. But the offense has struggled. They've only scored one offensive touchdown in each of the last 3 weeks. So the defense has had to step up. And they you can make a real argument they should have been 3-0 in these last 3 weeks here in this stretch. Because of the fact that, you know, we saw the Minnesota game where they gave up the big plays to Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook. And you're thinking, oh, my God, like, when is it going to stop? And the big plays, you know, to be completely honest, they have not stopped. That they are still an issue for this defense. But they have rallied together as a unit. They're flying to the football. They're shutting down the run at an insane rate. They're a top five run defense in the NFL this season. They just shut down the number one rushing offense. This team, the Cleveland Browns, were number one in yards, number one in yards per carry, number one in rushing touchdowns, and just fifth in attempts. They shut them down. 2.4 yards a carry. Nick Chubb, 8 carries for 16 yards. That's 2 yards a carry. Those are the types of performances elite defensive units give, especially when sometimes the offense needs to be picked up a little bit. And, you know, I saw something on Twitter. I cannot remember who it was, but pretty much this person just said, look, Lamar Jackson has won enough games for the Ravens defense. You know, if the Ravens defense needs to win a few for him, you know, why not? This is a team sport, and it absolutely is. I 100% agree with that. You have guys playing at an extremely high level. We talked about Patrick Queen a little bit in that first segment. He's been playing great football as of late. His counterpart, Josh Bynes, is playing well. You know, people are kind of giving Marlon Humphrey a bit of a tough time because he has had a couple of lapses. He was caught looking in the backfield on Sunday against Cleveland. He's had a couple of pass interference calls, holding calls, gotten burned a couple of times, but he is still one of the best corners in the NFL. He's still having a very, very good season. And he's a player that really just ups the play of a defense. You have Calais Campbell playing really well, although hopefully he recovers from his concussion soon. You know, get well to Calais Campbell, of course. For one, obviously his health, and two, because, you know, the Ravens are a much better defensive unit with him on their defense. And you have guys like Brandon Williams. Like, Brandon Williams struggled throughout the first part of this year. He missed a couple weeks with his injury. He comes back and is a force against the Cleveland offensive line, which is one of the better ones in the NFL. Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, all those guys. And then the secondary has also stepped up a little bit as well. You have Tavon Young, who I think has been playing great and arguably is their best tackler this season. I think Tavon Young's played at a great level. He's playing good football. Anthony Averett playing good football. They just have to put it together as a unit, get the big plays out of their vocabulary, get the other few mistakes out of their vocabulary. You know, you see Chuck Clark miss an interception, which is kind of a gimme. It, you know, literally is right in his lap and he just drops it. So those types of plays. Then this is a very, all things considered, low sack team. It's a low turnover team, but their pass rush has started to turn a corner a little bit. We've seen guys like Adafe always step up. Tyus Bowser be great. Justin Houston. You know, these guys are playing good football right now, and they've done it against some, you know, they haven't been the best offenses, right? Miami isn't the best offense in the world. Chicago, not the best offense in the world. You know, Cleveland obviously has a very hurt quarterback, but a great run game. So they'll have some tough tests. You know, what can they do against the Ben Roethlisberger-led offense that doesn't have Juju Smith-Schuster, Ben Roethlisberger isn't playing great football right now. They obviously have Najee Harris, their offensive line's up and down. But if they get Campbell back this week, I think this could be a really good game for them. Jimmy Smith has not played a lot, so he's getting phased out of their defense. It seems like, you know, that they're going with younger options. Brandon Stevens has, you know, had inconsistencies ever since taking over for Deshaun Elliott, but this defense has been great this year. It's been amazing. And I think that when you look at it, they needed it. They needed this defense to step up, especially after what we saw in week 7 against Cincinnati or the big plays in week 9 against Minnesota. People were wondering, can this defense be good, even though the pass defense has just been so bad this year? And they're figuring it out. They're slowly climbing up the rankings in pass defense stats, and I hope that will continue. But yeah, the defense has been great. Our next question here comes from, what is Lamar Jackson for real? Well, I know he's very good. He asks, how do you feel about the bold coaching decision to tell Lamar to keep firing, basically, and keep cackling over us winning a game 4 interceptions to 0, essentially daring the Browns to score? And yeah, the Ravens, they snapped that 52-game losing streak in the NFL dating back to 2015, the first team since 2015 to win a game where their quarterback throws 4 interceptions, and it's basically unheard of to have a quarterback throw 4 interceptions and a team win a football game. But one, it speaks to the defense, how the defense played, and the offense overall. I mean, yeah, there were opportunities they missed. It was not their best game. Lamar Jackson, obviously, 4 interceptions is never going to get it done week to week. You know, that will usually lose you the football game. But with the defense making Cleveland's offense pretty one-dimensional by having them throw the football, they did their job. And so the decision to have Lamar Jackson keep firing, you know, at the end of the half where you have 3 of those turnovers come and it's kind of like boom, 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 you're trying to score points, trying to put points up on the board. The Ravens held the football for a lot longer than Cleveland did overall. And obviously that's part of what they did in 2019 and 2020, those ball control offenses. You run 9 minutes off the clock, 10 minutes off the clock, and you're putting that defense out there. The Ravens defense can go out there for like a minute and be like, hey, we're fresh, we're good, let's get a 3 and out, and then they do it again. And so the Ravens were kind of doing that a little bit, but the turnovers were just killers. And I think the reason why the Ravens were like, all right, keep going, was one, because of situational football. He kind of had it before the end of the half, and you're like, all right, we need to move the ball a bit. Our run game isn't really working. This run game, and we talked about this with Spencer Schultz yesterday. If you want to check out that show, I do highly recommend. But we talked about it yesterday where this running game is not going to pick up the 10, 15, 20, 30-yard runs that they were able to with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, and even with a player like Lamar Jackson who wasn't getting as focused in the run game, because – we talked about it. Lamar Jackson is really the only player in that run game now who can be a dynamic threat and who has that wiggle and who has that burst and that speed. You know, Latavius Murray can get 2 yards when you need to, but he's not that big play runner. Devonta Freeman can make some nice jump cuts. He's improved over the season, but he's not that explosive player he was back in 2016, 2017 anymore. So I think that the reason they said, hey, keep throwing, let's keep going, is because they needed chunk yards, and they knew that for the most part, their run game is not going to get them those chunk yards this year. And the Ravens' run game this year, it is what it is. The Ravens have had to adjust their offense because of it. Lamar Jackson's had to throw more because of it. And it was their plan to throw more, it feels like, even with the running backs in the fold. But, you know, the run game has been inconsistent this year. It hasn't been amazing. It'll get the job done, but it's not going to take a team to the next level or over the top. They're missing Dobbins. They're missing Edwards. They're missing Ronnie Stanley. So you have to throw the football. And I do think it's rust. I think it was a little bit of rust for Jackson. The reads just weren't there. You know, he was kind of firing a little bit. He missed a throw to Mark Andrews where he was wide open, where, you know, it was the face mask play where he was grabbed and the officials didn't see it. You know, the officials are a different story, but yeah, you know, you just look at all those and you're like, oh, it's like opportunities missed. And it's those types of plays that can get you off to that fast start before the half, you know, where you can put up a touchdown or a field goal, you get the ball back. And that's why I'm a huge proponent of, hey, I love it when the Ravens get the ball in the second half and they kick off in the first half, because I love it when they can go into the first half locker room with that momentum. So, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, I don't think it was the wrong decision to say, hey, Lamar, just go out there and keep firing, because what message does it send to a quarterback, especially a guy who he knows his coaching staff has the belief in him and he has belief in the coaching staff? What message does it send to all of a sudden be like, you know what, we have a minute and change left. We have 70 yards to go. Let's just run the clock out. You know, we'll run it a couple of times and that'll be it. No, you know, you fire the football, you keep throwing, you keep pushing. So I think these interceptions, I think two of them were Jackson's fault, two of them were not. You kind of have really different plays where you could argue, oh, you know, only one of them was Jackson's fault, or, you know, two of them. But I think that it was okay to say, hey, keep going. Let's keep trying to get points before the end of the half. And then the other one was, you know, I think they just wanted to take a deep shot. They hadn't really done it for most of the game. There were a couple, but yeah, I think overall it was all right to do. Our final question before we head into our final break comes from Positive Vibes 0611. We'll get back to him in the final segment as well. And he also is about the interceptions from Lamar Jackson. He says, four interceptions is four interceptions. That's terrible for a quarterback, but is and has Lamar been taking a bulk of the blame for bad play designs and bad play calling? At one time, there was a question of whether or not it was Roman or not having the players. Now we have the players and the offense still loses. And, you know, this is a difficult question, but it's a good one. Because what I preached for a really long time is that I think it's always never going to be one or the other. It's never going to be 100% execution. It's never going to be 100% on the players. I think you have to find the area where, you know, one will outweigh the other at points. It's not like, oh, it's 50-50 all the time. Like, you know, there's no blame or there's all the blame everywhere. Look, sometimes there's a terrible play call and the players don't execute it, and that's the reason why. And hey, it is 50-50. But sometimes the play call is bad and the players still execute. Sometimes the players are nice, but the play call is good. So in these situations, I don't think Greg Roman called a bad game on Sunday night. I think if you want to look for poor performances, you can go to the first half in Indianapolis or against Indianapolis. You could go to the Miami game. There are a couple more where you can say this was a bad play calling quarter or a bad play calling half. But I think, you know, there is blame to be passed around for Lamar Jackson, for the offensive line, for the run game, for the wide receivers, tight ends, whoever. There's also plenty of blame to be passed around for Greg Roman, situational football, whatever you want to call it. I do think it's never one or the other. It's always, you know what, this was a great play call, but the players didn't execute and it resulted in an interception. Or the players, they scored a touchdown, but this was a terrible situational play call. Like, what are you doing? Like, good thing it worked out. So in Cleveland, if you want to talk about the Cleveland game in week 12, I think it was more an execution. There were a couple of play calls where I was kind of scratching my head at, like, why are you throwing deep there? Why are you throwing a screen here? But I didn't think it was overall terrible. I do think this is a really big stretch for Greg Roman, though, because he's a guy who has done a lot of great things with this offense. But if it can't continue to evolve, and I think it has this year, right? The pass offense has improved. He's done a lot with not a lot of his pieces. But this next year or so will be huge for Greg Roman. I don't see him getting fired at the end of the season unless something drastic happens and this team just falls off a cliff offensively, which, you know, you can argue they kind of have. But if that continues, I'm talking about throughout the rest of the year, then it's like, all right, does this offense need more? Or they're just going to say, you know what? Our offense wasn't good for the rest of the season, but there were injuries. We're going to give you another shot. So that's where I could see it happening. I do think for this game, it was more an execution. I don't think Lamar gets blamed too much. I do think he deserves some blame, but he also was a player who just masked so many weaknesses for an offense where, you know, you have to appreciate his greatness. I know I do every single day. So it's not 50-50. You know, some games it's the play calling more than the execution. Sometimes it's the execution more than the play calling. We'll head into our final break, though. When we get back, we'll be diving into two more mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. This holiday season, grab the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar or even better than a candy bar in Built Bar. You get the best of both worlds, delicious and healthy. There are so many flavors, you'll have a hard time choosing. We have raspberry mint brownie, cherry or double chocolate, cookies and cream, or peanut butter brownie. Built Bar gives you that extra fuel you'll need to bust down the mall doors and battle all the holiday shoppers. People are so passionate about their favorite flavor, they'll fight for it and things could get out of hand. Tell Santa to throw a few Built Bars in those stockings with so many flavors, they'd make anyone's Christmas morning a happy one. So dip your Built Bar into a piping hot cup of cocoa, let it melt a little bit, and give your beverage a bit of that Built Bar flavor. Like some of those marshmallowy treats around the holidays, you need to get your hands on Built Bar Puffs. They're light, they're fluffy, and marshmallowy through and through. Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off of your order. We return here, our final segment of this midweek edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still hanging out with you here. We just talked about some mailbag questions. We'll round it out with some more mailbag questions, and we'll start off with a question from the American Stallion, who asks, what offensive linemen are we likely to be able to pick up in free agency in the draft this offseason? And so this is a good question, because in my opinion, the Ravens do need to do some work on the offensive line, and they need not a complete makeover, but they need some work done. And in terms of free agency, I don't necessarily see a path where they can get like great offensive linemen with how many guys they need to re-sign, with what contracts they have coming up in the future. Offensive linemen generally are one of the more pricey positions to pay in NFL free agency, because teams want them and they want them badly. And for the teams that can't develop their own offensive linemen, they're like, hey, you know what? We'll drop $40, $50, $60, $100 million, a big jump there, on a great offensive lineman to help mask those issues. And the draft is a different story. I could see the Ravens putting in 1, 2, 3 selections for an offensive lineman at that position. I do think tackle is the priority they need to make. A right tackle, specifically left tackle, they have it, right? Even though Ronnie Stanley's medical history has not been amazing, he's never played a full season in his NFL career. He's only played in one game this season. He's done. He obviously had the very, very serious ankle injury that he's had to have multiple surgeries on. I still think you try to find the right tackle, and you kind of trust Ronnie Stanley in this situation. You know, I think after this surgery, he will be good. Now, again, no definitive statements from me, but I do think that he'll be able to recover. It's a tough, long, grueling recovery, but I have confidence that he can do it. So if you can get that book in, you know, we saw the Ravens with Ronnie Stanley and with Orlando Brown Jr. and how well that was. Now, they obviously had guys like Marshall Yanda on that line. You know, Kevin Zeitler's not a Marshall Yanda, but he's still a pretty good player, and I think he's in Baltimore for at least one more season after this one. So you look at the offensive linemen this year, and I'll focus on tackles. You have Jackson Kirkland from Washington, Darian Kennard from Kentucky. You have Abraham Lucas from Washington State. Daniel Falele from Minnesota, who a lot of people like. He's huge. He's 6'9", 380 pounds. I mean, he's also very mobile for his size. People look at him as kind of like a little bit less mobile than what Mekhi Becton was at his size, but the Jets fell in love with that. You have a bunch of other guys as well. Rasheed Walker from Penn State, Trevor Penning from Northern Iowa, you know, even Evan Neal from Alabama, who I think the Ravens have no shot of getting. And there are a few more in there as well, don't get me wrong. They're also, you have a bunch of other guys who can be versatile pieces. So not just, hey, he's just a right tackler, he's just a left tackler, he's just a guard. For example, Ikem Ekwonu from NC State is one of my favorite players in this draft class, can play a bunch of different positions. He probably won't be there by the time the Ravens pick, but he can play guard, he can play tackle, and the Ravens love those, you know, we talk about positionless defense, they love guys who can play multiple positions on the offensive line. So, you know, you have to kind of wonder what their plan is, especially because let's say they invest 3 picks in their offensive line, which I know a lot of people are like, let's just remake it. I don't think they need to remake it, but let's say they do that. If they do that, where are the cuts coming? Where are the players leaving from this Ravens team? You know, Pashon McCary is a free agent. Are they going to let him walk if they do that? I think he's a great player. They should re-sign him. Is Tristan Colon the odd man out? You know, does he leave? What do they do there? Alejandro Villanueva, you know, is he somebody who ends up getting cut? The Ravens can save a bit of money. It's not a ton of cap savings, but they can save a bit of money. Because you have Juwan James, who's under contract next season. He's coming back. He's a right tackle option. So there are going to be interesting parts of this where I could see the Ravens maybe going with one offensive tackle and one interior guy. Maybe they go with a couple offensive tackles for that depth there, because you still have Ben Cleveland, Ben Powers. You have a bunch of other players who are just on that fringe. And we saw during the 2021 offseason where the Ravens had to trade away a young project player in Ben Bredesen because they just didn't have the room for him on the roster. And he was the guy who lost out the battle and they couldn't afford to keep him on the roster. So it'll be interesting to see. The Ravens, I think, definitely should invest a high pick in an offensive lineman, in an offensive tackle specifically. As we've seen, when Pashon McCary goes down and they don't have that depth behind him, it's the offensive tackle that's been an issue for this team for years. So if they can do that and maybe invest another pick as well, it could be the beginning of reshaping that offensive line. But they do potentially need an interior guy, because Kevin Zeitler, while a solid player, is getting up there in age a little bit and won't be around for 10 more seasons. So they're going to need somebody there eventually. Maybe it is this year where they decide to actually do that. And our final question, we'll head back to Positive Vibes 0611. And he responds and says, none that's a draft focus, offensive line and defensive line, in my opinion. And so, yeah, this is going to be a line heavy draft. I feel like defensive lineman, everybody looks at Jordan Davis from Georgia and they say, yeah, let's get Jordan. Let's get Davis. And I don't know if he'll be there. If he is, I think that's a no-brainer pick, depending on who else is there. But the Ravens surprised many. It did not draft an offensive lineman in the 2021 draft. They did not draft a defensive lineman in the 2021 draft. They opt to go with players like Ben Mason. A lot of people scratched their head at that pick, myself included, and we all know what happened with that. But you know what? I think this is the year of the line. Offense, defense, the big boys coming in, because the defense will have to undergo a bit of an identity shift, it feels like. You have guys like Calais Campbell, Brandon Williams, Derek Wolfe, all over the age of 30. They've tried to invest for the future a little bit with players like Justin Madubuike and, yeah, Broderick Washington, but they need more there. You know, their depth on the defensive line has been a key strength for them, and I think it'll be huge for them to get, you know, a top flight guy. People were talking a little bit last year about players like Christian Barmore and a couple other high-profile guys, but the defensive class last year, or the defensive line class, was very, very weak. So outside of Barmore, I didn't love a ton of guys. There have been a couple of guys. You have, you know, a few people contributing, but I think that this year they could grab a defensive lineman that really, really helps them out. Offensive lineman as well. It'll be, again, the draft of the big boys. I feel like it's a hunch early on for the Baltimore Ravens in 2022. That's all I have for you today here, though, on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be diving into Crossover Thursday with Locked On Steelers. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.